Okay, I think we're ready to get started. I'm Sally Caputo, Acting CEO and President of AMCS. I would like to welcome you all to our webinar today, What I Wish I Knew in My First Year of Consulting. So before we get started, please keep in mind that we welcome you to ask questions throughout the webinar. And you can do so by using the chat function in the lower left-hand portion of your screen. We'll also have a few polling questions today, a simple mouse click, and your responses will remain anonymous. We'll show them in aggregate on the screen. So before we get started, I'd just like to tell you a little bit about AMCF. AMCF has been in existence now for about 84 years. We are the trade association representing management consulting industry, and we represent a wide breadth of firms from the smallest organizations to the very largest. And we provide, you know, the opportunity for leaders in the industry to come together, share best practices, and discuss common challenges in the industry. So part of AMCF's program is the CCC program, the Consulting Career Connection. This webinar is brought to you by the Consulting Career Connection. The objective here is to build awareness of the industry as a desirable career choice and promote the value proposition of management consulting. So we have a website, which is an interactive hub for discussion and provides a lot of information about the industry. And we urge all of you to visit our website, consultingcareerconnection.com and .org. So it's worth noting also that the Consulting Career Connection program will now become a subscription model going forward, and we've made some great enhancements to this program. We're going to be offering a resume drop function, a searchable database of firms, and other opportunities for you to get involved there and really take advantage of what we're building here. So with that, we'll start our content today. I'd like to introduce Andy Katz. Okay, we're going to have a few polling questions here first. So take a look here, and we'd ask these questions of those on the phone. Have you ever worked in management consulting before? So just take a moment to click the radio buttons. So the results are showing that the majority of you have not. This is a great way for you to prepare, hopefully, for a career, a robust career in this industry. Some of you have, and others as an intern. But the majority of you are new to the thought of going into this industry. So the next polling question, please. And where are you currently based? We'd just like to get an understanding of who we have in our audience. And not surprisingly, a lot of you are from the Northeast. That happens to be a great feeder of talent for the management consulting industry. And it's nice to see that other areas of the U.S. as well as international students are represented on our webinar today. And the next question, please. What level of education have you most recently completed or are in the process of completing? A lot of undergraduates, a lot of graduate master's program students. And keep in mind that, you know, one of the benefits of going into a career in consulting is that there are opportunities that are offered for students regardless of the degrees that you've chosen or what level. So keep that in mind. Okay, next slide, please. Can we move to the next slide, please? Seems like we're having technical difficulty here. Okay, well, let's move on to the content then. I'd like to now introduce Andy Katz. Andy is a senior consultant with Ernst & Young, and we've been fortunate enough to have Andy working with AMCF now for about 6 months, and he is charging our new projects and special projects. So we're really thrilled to have Andy here with us, and he has agreed to moderate the session today. And Andy, we welcome you also to interject with some of the your experiences at Ernst & Young, along with those of our presenters. So with that, great. I'll turn it over to Andy. And Andy?
Great. Thanks, Sally. We'll see if we can get back to some of those questions later on, but thanks for the introduction. Just a quick background. I've been at Ernst & Young for 2.5 years now in their advisory practice, specifically in their finance group, located in New York. I've previously interned in another consulting firm called Bearing Point, going into the summer of my senior year. Out of undergrad, I went to work at Bank of America for a year and a half. Really wanted to get back into the field of consulting, so I ended up at Ernst & Young and have been there ever since. So I will move into a quick description of the overall agenda for today and then introduce you to two of our participants on the call. Next slide. All right. So our two speakers today are Travis Ansel, a manager in Strategic Services, a healthcare strategy group, and John O. Goldsmith, a senior consultant within the life sciences and healthcare practice at Deloitte Consulting. So, Travis, do you want to give a quick background on yourself, and then we can go through the overall agenda?
Absolutely. Thanks, Andy. Appreciate everybody giving us the opportunity to talk a little bit about ourselves. My name is Travis Ansel. As Andy said, I'm with the Healthcare Strategy Group. I've been here approximately 5 years. I currently manage our strategic services, which is mostly organizational strategy for healthcare in healthcare, mostly for hospitals and health systems with some large physician practices mixed in. My background was in business at the University of Tennessee. I did my MBA at Vanderbilt University. I didn't do healthcare, did business strategy and organizational performance, but transitioned into healthcare. I've been doing management consulting for about 7 years, 6 years of which is in healthcare, 1 year outside, mostly in the music industry. Healthcare, a little bit about Healthcare Strategy Group. We're a kind of a boutique consulting firm based out of Louisville, Kentucky, with offices also in Washington, D.C. We work pretty much 95% for nonprofit hospitals across the U.S. Our business is kind of organized into two sections, one which does more organizational high-level strategy, and then one which does more network development, mainly on the physician side. Why I joined, I was looking for a small firm that I could grow with. I've got a little bit of entrepreneurial spirit in me. Wanted to help grow a business, not come into a one that was already existing and just looking at me to produce extra revenue for them. When I joined the business, I was 25, and still now probably picking jobs by who I'm going to work with and who I'm going to get to learn from on a day-to-day basis. So having direct exposure to our senior people, direct mentoring from them, and being able to work directly with C-level clients was a big draw for me. And again, the opportunity to work, since we're such a small firm, you tend to wear a lot of hats. So having the opportunity to work on multiple sides of the business, understand, get kind of a broad perspective of healthcare, at least for the niche that we work in, was appealing to me.
Great, thanks. And Jono, just a quick introduction on yourself.
Hi, thanks. My name is Jono. I finished undergrad at Emory University back in 2005 and recently completed my MBA at Columbia last year. I joined Deloitte right out of college, basically, and worked there for a few years. And after kind of paying your dues, they push you out. They want you to get your MBA and then come back to the firm afterward. But they had tuition reimbursement deals, so that's where I am right now. In the meantime, I interned during business school at Jefferies doing investment banking and also helped launch a new company called City Health Works, for which I'm now a board member. And I've kind of been all over the place just based on that. But, Deloitte's been a really fun experience. I grew up in the firm, a lot of great people. I've worked in telecom and financial services and healthcare, and within healthcare, had health insurance companies as clients, had hospital systems as clients, and have really ran the gamut as far as proposal work. So I guess we're about to tell you a lot more. Thanks.
Great. Thanks. Thanks, Jonna, for that. I think it's really great. We have, although both have a specific focus or have dealt with healthcare, you know, we're really covering two pretty drastically different companies and how they're set up in terms of size. So we should get some really good feedback from both of you today. Just looking at the overall agenda, we already went through introductions just now. We will go through overall diversity of project work, cover a section on evaluations and feedback as it relates to the consulting industry. We'll talk about company culture, a piece on education and training, and then finally career advancement and development. So we can kick it off, go to the next slide, and talk a little about the diversity of – oh, sorry, we do have a few more questions here. But, so we're going to say, how many years of professional work experience do you have for those of you attending this webinar? Okay, it looks like quite a diverse mix. All right, so we'll go in. Oh, there's a quick slide. All right, so Jonna, if you want to quickly kick this off, when we get into project work, just give a quick overview of the types of projects you've been on, how they've changed, how some were similar, just a background of the overall diversity.
Yeah, sure. Well, I was basically put on a project at random when I came into the firm. It was a post-merger integration project. It was when Singular acquired AT&T before they changed the name back to AT&T. And for 5 months, we worked on getting those systems aligned. It was really interesting to be part of a project that you saw on the front page that was kind of resonating all over the news and something I hadn't really thought about before joining. Shortly after, I did a service and repair strategy project for Motorola for the Razr phone, and that was cool. So even within telecom, my first two projects were drastically different, one being service, you know, post-merger, one being for devices and visiting facilities in Mexico and throughout the U.S., and that sort of thing. And beyond that, you know, some projects, you know, were 3 to 4 weeks long, some were 14 months long, and that just was based on selling more and more work to the client after doing a good job. And I've worked in Georgia and Chicago and Connecticut, North Carolina, Minnesota, Delaware, you know, New York, Memphis, and I'm sure I'm forgetting some, but it's really been a crazy few years.
Definitely. Travis, how about yourself?
As a smaller firm, like I said, we've got a bit more limited focus. So we focus only on hospitals and large physician groups. When I joined the firm, the first two projects I got thrown into, one was developing a 3-year strategic plan for a hospital with about $500 million in operating revenue a year out in Indiana, kind of putting together their overall organizational strategy and having that filter down to some specific elements that reference their physician network strategy. And the second project I joined in on was an operational assessment of about a $60 million physician group, looking for operational inefficiencies and revenue cycle improvement, fairly standard stuff. Over time, my project focus, as I said, has narrowed to be more organizational, high-level strategy. In terms of project engagement length, it really varies depending on what the client is needing from me. I get, in addition to just high-level strategy, I get into a lot of basic problem-solving between the hospital boards, administration, and physician groups. It's an area that's rife for internal conflict, and having an outside voice is often helpful in resolving issues. One of the things I like about my work is we don't necessarily work on site a lot. We go on site to clients as it's needed, but we tend to come back to the office and work together as a team on projects. There are a number of benefits to that, but the one that I like the best is it allows me to work on a number of projects at a time. So, for instance, right now I've got about 17 different projects across 10 different clients in 8 different states going on. So it really fits my need for variety, and you know, kind of walking into a different situation every day and kind of addressing a different problem every day.
And the other thing I really like is that having that type of relationship where I'm able to work on multiple projects gives me the opportunity to work with the same client over a number of years. So for the 5 years I've been here, I've got a number of clients that I've worked with over those 5 years for the entire time. So it's been great to build a relationship with the executive team of a hospital, with the board of a hospital, and kind of become a trusted advisor to them and being a resource they can call on.
Great. Definitely, Travis. Yeah, I think just speaking on behalf of EY and hearing both of you, it just, in terms of diversity, it's really, there's no limit. I mean, you can be on cross-industry, cross-service line, really everything in the mix. The length of time you can see varies. I've been on a project for a year and a half. I've been on one for 4 weeks. I've been on one in New York, and I've been on one in India and Japan. So, you know, there's no ceiling or restraints as to what you could possibly get onto. And I think the good news is if you find something you really like, you have the ability to do it over again down the road. And if you come across a project you may not like so much, the good news is it will be over in a few weeks or months, and maybe you won't ever have to do that again. So I think it does leave some flexibility and options in terms of pursuing your greatest interests. Well, great.
Andy,
thanks,
I'm just going to jump in because we have a question here on diversity of project work. The first one is, how much did you need to know about your client's background and industry before you get started? I know that, you know, in your area, Travis, that you work predominantly in healthcare, it might be a little bit different than Deloitte, but love to hear your insights on that. So again, how much did you need to know about your client's background and industry before you get started? Jonna, you want to start us off?
Yeah, sure. Well, I think the consulting answer is, you know, when you first get on board, you know, you spend a little time just kind of reading up on things your team will have sent you. So as long as you read a presentation or two, I think you're good for the first day. But after that first week, you're expected to ask a lot of questions. And by week two, you should be more or less, for lack of a better word, an expert and ready to kind of drive through it. So, I didn't know a single thing about telecom before I started my telecom project. I didn't know a single thing about healthcare before my first healthcare project. And I don't know, hopefully it's not too not too House of Lies-ish, but it's kind of the way it is. But it's what makes it kind of fun.
Thanks. And Travis, tell us a little bit about how much you need to know about your clients before each engagement.
I'll just echo and say there's a lot of truth in what Jonna just said. In terms of client, well, let me step back and address the industry real quick. For me, not having a healthcare background, it took me, I would say, a full 18 months before I felt comfortable walking into a boardroom or to an executive room and knowing what I needed to know to make sure that I had I had an answer that was appropriate to the client's question. That doesn't mean that 2 weeks in, I wasn't expected to be able to pretend that I knew what the answer to the question was. In terms of client background, it really depends. It depends where you're at in the engagement. When I go in to talk to a potential client, I try to be well-versed in that client's history. I try to be well-versed in what their current challenges are. I try to give myself enough knowledge to know. I try to walk into the room knowing what they're going to ask about, but that's not always the case. I don't always end up knowing what they're going to ask about. For me, you know, being a younger person, I'm 30 now, being a younger consultant, playing in a management advisory sandbox, being young is not necessarily a deal breaker, but it's certainly a challenge. When you're looking at a CEO or a board chair and giving them advice on their issues, you have to have the credibility to sell it. All this is bringing me around to say, I tend to over-prepare. I tend to try to know whenever I'm brought in to a situation where I'm expected to be the expert, which you frequently are at any part of a management consulting role, I tend to err on the side of over-preparing and trying to understand as much as I can about the client because so much, as a younger consultant, so much more is expected of you
than if you're, say, someone with gray hair, where your answer just, if it sounds right, it's correct, versus where if you're young, if your answer sounds right, you get looked at skeptically, if that makes sense.
That's interesting. Okay, thanks, guys. Moving on, Andy.
Thanks, Ellie. So, again, it seems like they're quite a diverse mix of work, and you can see the contrast between Travis and Jono in terms of, and myself, actually, length of project, number of clients at once, number of projects either occurring at the same time or just one-off. So really quite a mix. If we move on here, evaluations and feedback will be the next topic. And there's another question we have for the audience. Have your evaluations and feedback in the past been more qualitative, quantitative, or a mixture of both? Take a few seconds to look at that.
This is Jono. Yeah, I think they've been more qualitative than anything else. Some of the big, sought-after qualities that people are looking to evaluate are your executive presence, you know, working with the team, ability to storyboard and integrate the objective, you know, with some deliverables, whether they be quantitative in nature like Excel documents or presentations. So I think it's more about seeing how each person connects the dots. At year end, not per project, but at year end, they do get a little more quantitative, where they see, you know, what your utilization of projects might be and how many people you've worked for and how many proposals you've helped with, you know, things like that. But all in all, I'd say it's probably more qualitative.
All right, thanks, Jono. Travis?
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's one of those differences between working for a large firm and a small firm, but, when you're part of a firm that's growing rapidly, some of this structure, this evaluation structure, the feedback structure is kind of built on the fly. So it's one of those things that you have to be comfortable with as you're assessing what size of firm you want to join. But for me, it's mostly qualitative throughout the year. When I'm working with a senior person, which is usually a partner in our firm, we have an engagement. I get feedback directly from him as to here's what you did well, here's what you didn't do well, here's what you need to improve on. We get to talk through each engagement individually, and I get direct feedback from them about what I did or didn't handle appropriately. Again, as Jono said, year end, what you're being evaluated on is probably similar across all sizes of firms, which is, you know, what type of hours did you bill? How much business did you develop? What else did you do in terms of developing proposals, in terms of developing business development, marketing materials. So that tends to get pretty quantitative and ultimately that's what you tend to get judged on. But
Travis, can you speak a little bit, I know we're on your slide now, evaluations feedback, a little bit around your company's goal setting process. And I know you quickly went over the evaluation piece. And then actual opportunities for advancement within your company.
As I said, you know, the reason I joined a small firm was, you know, I've got a little bit of entrepreneurial spirit in me. So in terms of goal setting, you know, when a firm is growing rapidly, we've grown, you know, about 300% over the last 3 to 4 years. A lot of the goal setting and the monitoring of employees kind of gets put by the wayside in turn, and the overall focus is on the company's growth. So when you're joining a situation like this, it's really important to be self-driven. It's important to understand what's going to be successful for you and your firm, and really drive those goals yourself. So for me, it's really around business development. It's really around trying to structure my work so that I'm focused on working the projects that I'm interested in and are going to develop my career, as opposed to getting pulled into other projects that aren't, as beneficial as my career development. In terms of promotion opportunities and advancement, I would say we're fairly typical in terms of career path, where if your performance is on target, you can expect to move up every two and a half, three years. But again, one of the nicer things, it's also one of the downsides to a small firm where that structure isn't in place, is, you know, you can move up very quickly, as I have, if you're able to take on a part of the business and manage it yourself and take it off of senior leadership's plate. But, you know, conversely, the downside to that is if you're someone who's not as much of a self-starter or is having a little trouble getting their career organized, you can tend to languish because there's not the structure in place to help kind of catch you and get you back on the right path, pushing you towards advancement.
Definitely. I think that's a great lead-in as we move on to Jono's opinion on this matter, because, again, with a bigger company like Deloitte, there's going to be some differences. Jono, can you take us through your goal-setting process? I know you also just spoke briefly on the feedback piece, but talk about Deloitte's overall environment as it relates to the whole review piece, the goal-setting throughout the year, the reviews. Start with that.
Yeah, well, I'll be honest. I usually don't set goals until I'm a little bit into the year, until I know what I'm working on, what the role might be, the people I'm around, because just to offer an example, you know, I had been working predominantly in health plans before business school, and at school I had a focus in finance and pharma. I come back, and now I'm working, you know, with hospital systems. I did not see that coming. I had no experience, and if I were to come back to the firm and say, hey, my goal is to, you know, lead such and such a work thread, you know, with relation to pharmaceuticals, it would have been completely off base. So you kind of have to feel it out as it comes and, you know, figure out the right piece of the puzzle that really does fit in this overall goal-setting process. So I think as you move up and get more senior, the goals you set are more attuned to, you know, selling about $2-3 million in revenue for the firm and things like that, managing people. But, you know, this part of my career, it's really a crapshoot. So with this being what I wish I knew my first year in consulting, this is my this is my honest answer.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's funny for me why in hearing your story, it's similar, but we actually have same thing. We have a mandatory goal setting process, very structured. It's a series of reviews and updates. It passes through many people. You know, and if you like structure and you like a bigger company, that's one thing to take into account. And on the flip side, if you like a more open-ended, less governing system, maybe a small company is something worth looking into. So it's really, again, a matter of personal opinion and preference in a lot of these, but it's good to hear both sides of this story. I know you went through quickly, Jono, but can you give a quick summary on Deloitte's advancement capabilities within the company if you were to progress down your current path?
Sure. Coming out of college, usually you advance from an analyst to a consultant in 2 years. And you stay for a maximum of 2 more years as a consultant, and in that window you can go to business school. So let's say if you're on the fast track, 2 years as an analyst, maybe another year as a consultant just because it's more typical, and then 2 years of B school. So you're 5 years in, you're 27. You come back as a senior consultant, it's 2 to 3 years before you're promoted to manager, then 2 to 3 more years before a senior manager, and maybe 3 to 5 years, let's say, before you're a partner. So you really have to pay lots and lots of dues if you want to be a partner-level person of the firm. I will say that I've worked with a lot of, you know, great, amazing people that have kind of advanced through, but only to a particular point. A lot of times folks kind of get that itch, and they want to do something where they have more control, where they have more creative ability, and they get pulled into a new company, they start their own thing, go to a larger organization that's in the industry, and a lot of the folks that I work with now that are partner level, they came in later in the game. So very rare do I see somebody who went from start to finish. When it does happen, it definitely is a little more rare.
Definitely. Jono, I actually just read an article in the Wall Street Journal, the average length for an individual at a consulting firm is 3 years. That's what it stated. So I completely agree. I've seen people go from entry level all the way to partner, but it's not nearly as common as some people branching off and doing their own thing or going to a different company or going to another company and coming back. So you really kind of see the full gamut, again, of different opportunities and what you're exposed to in terms of career options.
And it's not a bad thing either. I mean, if you're doing good work and people kind of catch wind of that, you get a great offer, and you really do have to jump ship, you know? You can't stay if the offer is too good.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the one other thing to point out is whether you do stay at the consulting firm or branch off into industry or something completely new, the experience that you gain in those few years at the firm are really, really highly desired, and that's actually the reason why the turnover rate is so high. Consultants are one of the most requested and desired individuals as it relates to other jobs and eventual leadership positions at other companies. So it's definitely a good point.
This is Travis. I actually we have a summer intern who I was meeting with this morning who's doing her MHA, and we were talking about the difference for an MHA going into consulting and into hospital administration. And my opinion that I gave to her and that I've given to other people who are starting out and trying to make that decision is consulting is such a great way to start. This is obviously focused on healthcare, but consulting is such a great way to start a healthcare career, even if you want to end up working in industry. And I would imagine that applies to all other industries as well. Having such a broad exposure to the ways different companies are set up, different companies are managed, and all the different problems they can create for themselves is just a fantastic way to understand, one, an industry, and two, a problem-solving process that can kind of cut through the kind of organizational bureaucracy that gets created at the firms that typically use consultants.
Yeah, great points. You know, you just got me thinking, too. I was speaking to a senior manager recently who was telling me in his 10 years, only once has he not been offered a position at the client company he was doing his work for, which I found really funny. It's the relationships that you build with your client almost can act as if you're part of the company. So a lot of options there.
Andy, I'm going to jump in here with a question from one of our students here. You really want to understand, how do you promote yourself and your success within your firm? And, you know, understanding if you don't necessarily have a direct boss all the time that's working for you or working with you, because it's a very autonomous type of career, how do you then promote yourself, stand out, and make sure that you're seen and your successes are noted? Maybe Andy, give us the perspective of Ernst & Young, and then, you know, we'll hear from our presenters, Travis and Jono.
Sure, it's a great question. At a company as big as Ernst & Young, we're over 170,000 in total. Of course, that's not all advisory, but for such a big company, you know, the importance to really stick out is huge. And being that the industry is in advisory, you don't have a full-time boss all the time. And depending on what project you're on, the partner can be the same as the last three projects. It could be someone you've never worked with before. You know, the individuals below you, staff level, or the managers above you could also be completely new, or some others that you've had prior history in the past. Either way, the notion of really promoting yourself and getting your name out there and some of the skills you've developed is really important. So I know from my standpoint, over a course of a year, take this year for example, our fiscal year end is approaching, so I'm kind of going through some of the feedback and review process now. I keep a list of everything I've done over the full course of the year. That includes people I've worked with, my biggest accomplishments, what I've learned, skill sets I've learned, challenges or opportunities faced, really everything. Because at this point of the year that I'm in right now, it's a pretty lengthy process in trying to document, you know, everything I've learned, the different projects I've been on, and then taking into account every review I've received on every project, and really looking at the full picture. And so at Ernst & Young, it's a pretty big process, which then gets reviewed by your counselor, and then there's a committee, and it's a multi-process and multi-stop procedure in terms of ending at your final rating. And the ability and need for you to really advocate yourself is huge. Otherwise, you do have the risk of being lost in the weeds of some of the others. So I always try to say and ask myself, you know, what's the biggest way I've differentiated myself from my peers? And try to hit on the points that are different than the rest. So, you know, in turn, which we can, it's a good segue for the next section here, but, you know, in addition to the standard engagement project that you're on, what else have you done? Internal initiatives, helping with recruiting, helping with a marketing, pro bono type work, helping with or assisting or participating with a volunteer day. All of that really gets looked at and taken into account and can really help be one way in separating yourself from your peers and standing out. That's just from Ernst & Young. Travis and Jono, Travis, why don't you start on this one? How about at your company? A little bit smaller, but still important to definitely make sure everyone's in touch with what you're doing.
It is. And obviously, it's a bit of a different dynamic because the people who own the company are, you know, I see them on a daily basis, and I'm generally working side by side with them on projects that they're involved on. But largely the same, I use the same strategy that Andy mentioned, which is I document everything. I know exactly what my value is to the company. I make it a point, you know, during my evaluation and review process, I know what I've worked on, I know what I've done well on, I know what specific things I've brought to the firm that other people haven't been able to bring. I tend to try to get involved outside of just the client work. You know, whenever we have a gap, whatever it is, you know, for instance, my after my first year here, you know, one of the big gaps we had developed as we had grown was that we didn't have a formal system for project management. So, you know, I spent my next 2 years largely working out, you know, in addition to my normal consulting FTE, working on putting together project management infrastructure. You know, working with a vendor to do that and setting up the way that we now manage ourselves internally, the way we manage our projects, the way we manage our revenue cycle. So I guess the takeaway there would be don't be afraid to jump into fixing any gap that you see that you know is going to have value to the partners or to the managers that whose attention you're trying to get. Another comment would be always try to seek out work that is either new, interesting, or different. Try to, you know, that depending on the company you're working for, there may be more or less opportunities for that. But when you have an opportunity, like using healthcare as an example, you know, with healthcare reform and the creation of accountable care organizations and the overall healthcare model moving to more of this clinically integrated population management model, you know, it's an area that someone who's 30 knows as much about as someone who's 60 in general. So looking to get involved in those lines where your company doesn't have as much expertise and you can make yourself an expert is a great way to stand out. And I guess the final comment I would have, especially if you're going to work for a bigger firm, is don't be your company, which to me means, you know, be Jono Goldsmith who works for Deloitte, not a Deloitte consultant named Jono Goldsmith. And I don't mean to put words in your mouth, Jono. But it's your responsibility to take control of your career and to market yourself both internally and externally in your firm if what you're doing is looking to rapidly advance in your career and have a lot of success. So don't just be the guy who does whatever he's asked of internally. You know, really take control of your career, be a thought leader, be an expert both in and outside of your firm. I guess that's it.
All great points. John, do you want to add anything to that?
Well, I think the initial question was, how do you promote yourself for future advancement? We have
well,
a counselor.
Really,
oh,
exactly.
Go ahead.
I was just yeah, how to make sure you don't fall into the you know huge mix of people your level and rank at Deloitte.
Yeah, it's like anything. You try to make friends in high places, buddy up with some of the directors and partners, and they should usually get you in the right direction. One example is I was going through our database of partner-level folks in the New York office. I found one guy who happens to be an Ironman triathlete. How many of those do you find in professional services? Not many. Became his buddy. All of a sudden, I feel like I have a name, this and that, whatever. And do that a few times. It's just like anything else you do, whether it's in school, professors, or whatever it might be. So, and I totally agree with Travis's point. You don't want to be any kind of a drone. You want to be who you are. And the thing is, you kind of have to, like, go through your drone years at first until you're able to break out of your shell a bit. But that's all I have to add.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Given the name of this call, what I wish I knew my first year, one really good piece of advice that I learned my first day, I was told on a lot of projects, you know, especially if you're traveling, you're at the client site Monday through Thursday, and then Friday you're usually in your local office, or you have the option to work in your local office. I always attend on Friday, every single Friday, to my office. And my first few weeks at the company, I walked around into every single partner office on my floor, introduced myself, gave a quick background, and that was that. But just to get on their radar and have them know who you are is huge. So I'd say networking, and we'll get into this in a little bit, but, you know, don't hide your light under a bushel, I guess. Make sure you're taking advantage of every single opportunity to meet someone new on any day. So thanks, guys. So that's a really good segue, actually, for this next piece on culture. If we go to the next slide here. Sorry, we do have one more polling question. As it relates to culture, what are you looking for in your company's culture? And if you could choose your top three on this survey, and we'll look at the results here. Wow, quite a mix. A lot of leadership is big, relationship. Oh, wait till everything's done here. Learning and development, big one. Leadership, relationship building, diversity and inclusiveness. So really across the board here. And that's great because they're all good points, and each company has its own benefits. So we'll move on to the next slide here. So on that topic, company culture, John, I'll let you start off with this one, but again, we'll start with the work-life balance at a bigger company like Deloitte. Take us through a quick summary on that.
I'm here, sorry. As far as the company culture, it's really hard to say that there is a company culture throughout because there are 30,000 employees. Before B-School, I worked in the Atlanta office, and now I'm in the New York office, and the cultures are completely different, just to be honest. And as you go from project team to project team, those all also vary, you know, a ton. I know that every organization that's that large really does try to have, you know, an integrated culture and messaging throughout, but when you really get down to it, it's really about the personalities of the folks you're working with and people in your office. As far as work-life balance, you know, most people are able to balance. Some people, not so much. It really depends on your style, on what you can take, on what your hobbies and interests are. Like right now, I'm balancing, you know, training for my next race, you know, working this job, serving as a board member for my nonprofit organization, doing night classes for nutrition training, doing my alt travel on the weekends, having fun. And as long as you cut out some of the things you don't really need, like TV and video games, you're usually okay. So, but you have to be prepared for, like, for changes. So you never want to plan too far out. And that's pretty much what I say about that.
Yeah. Hey, John, on that point, because I heard you say it, not everyone might know what this means. Can you just give a quick background on alternative weekend travel? Because we have the same thing at our company, and I think it's a good point.
Sure. So right now, you know, I'm out of the New York office. My client's in Denver. If I don't want to go back home for the weekend, I have a wedding, or I want to go on vacation, I could use that flight and go to Texas or go to Vancouver where I was last weekend or go to, you know, Thailand, whatever you want, you know, as long as it's within financial means and, you know, you should be good. So that's one of the really great perks about consulting, especially when you're younger. You really want to, like, travel the world, and I try to take full advantage, especially having been in the Atlanta office with, you know, Hartsfield going all over the place, being a great hub, and now with LaGuardia. So, yeah.
It's a really, really good point. You know, I was on a project, same thing, central located in the U.S., and every weekend it seemed like people were flying to Vegas or Florida or California or New York or Maine, and it's really fun, and it's a good thing to take advantage of. So it's a good point. And then just as we move into the mentoring piece of your company's culture, again, I know we kind of touched on it, but can you give us a quick snapshot of the progress between joining the company and how it segues into the review process, who you're assigned to, and how you actually kind of fit into the company when you start?
So at Deloitte, at least, we're all assigned a counselor, and at some point early on, you know, you get to know him, and it's not somebody you work with per se, but kind of like a confidant you can go with confidential, you know, matters, and also somebody that is there for you formally, and you can, you know, express, you know, your goals and ways you want to progress, and if you want a different type of project, you want to grow in different ways, he's kind of there for you to talk to. So he's kind of your non-boss boss, because he represents you. Now, as far as fitting into the company coming out of school, it's kind of like joining a fraternity where you already went through Rush, you already have your bid, but you want to go ahead now and meet your pledge class. So they really take the incoming class as a whole, and they kind of cultivate a community where you volunteer together, you have events together, happy hours together, you go to training together at an off-site location, and you know, over time, you just kind of meet the brothers in the fraternity, and you just become part of the company. So that's how I compare it.
Okay, great. Just to keep track of the time here, Travis, can you give a quick summary of a smaller company's culture and as it relates to work-life balance, travel, let's say, and a quick piece on your mentoring?
Sure. Work-life balance, specific to our firm, it's a focus because when you're working for a smaller firm, obviously it's going to depend on the city you're in. I'm in Louisville, which is moderately attractive, but not the easiest city to recruit people to that aren't from this region. So work-life balance is usually, you know, when you're talking about consulting, is usually a big recruiting tool because if you're working for a smaller firm, obviously we're not set up to have people turn over every 2 to 3 years. So the compensation, the benefits, and the focus on work-life balance all tend to be a little bit richer. But you know, the one thing that as I've gotten into consulting, and just a general comment about work-life balance, because I've done consulting both in and out of this firm and in and out of healthcare. You know, you have to control your schedule, but you also have to be willing to kind of be a slave to it at some point. Sometimes. There are some times when you know that you're going to have back-to-back-to-back 80 to 100-hour weeks, and that's just the case. There are some days where you're going to travel 3, 4, 5 days a week where you have to stay on-site over the weekend if that's what it takes. You know, obviously, the more planning you do up front and the more resources you have at your disposal, the more you can get away with that. But especially early on, there are times when your work life is, you know, your life is going to be out of balance with your work, but that's just one of the deals that comes with being a consultant. Mentoring, obviously, that's probably the biggest gap in terms of formal structure when you're looking at small firms versus large firms. Mentoring's, you know, pretty much done informally. I'm lucky to have a great relationship with one of the partners here. And our mentoring's been a little more formal, maybe than some of the other consultants here. It's a process that we've tried to make increasingly formal. One of our big focuses in terms of company culture is really focusing on learning and education and working together as a team and getting senior and junior people in the same room, even when, you know, the junior people aren't necessarily contributing value.
making sure that they're attending the meetings with C-levels or with board members so they can see, you know, what the work looks like as it's being executed with the client, not just what it looks like when it's on their computer. But, you know, again, I think it's true for all consulting firms, but especially for small, you have to, on the slide here it says, you know, it can be a sink or swim environment, and it's definitely true. You have to take a little bit of responsibility, a lot of responsibility for yourself and for your career path, even initially. You have to advocate for yourself, get on the projects that you want to work on as you can. And really take,
all really good points there, yeah. Travis. Just quickly going through the next slide. We're going to do one more polling question, or we have another polling question for education and training. Do you respond better to more formal education or on-the-job training? So we'll look at that. And it looks, for the most part, a mixture of both, but a little bit of formal and on-the-job thrown in as well. Okay, we'll go to the next slide here. It's a good lead-in for our next piece. In terms of education and training, some people are always asking, you know, what am I learning in college? Is this going to be relevant for my first job? And I think it's a really good point. So, Jono, you know, do you feel what you learned both in getting your MBA and undergrad was relevant or transferable to your work at Deloitte? And then in turn, what does Deloitte do in terms of its own training?
Honestly, I would say that what I learned in my undergrad, and I was a double major in business and philosophy, probably didn't translate. I didn't really bring any of those skills, tangibly at least, to Deloitte. It was all pretty much on the job. And there is a lot of learning required every year at Deloitte. When you first come on, you have, you know, a two-week orientation and training program. Every year you're required to have 40 hours of formal training. But that training is just more informative. Everything, all the tools I really need to get by are really learned on the job, even if it's technical. And if you're trying to, like, build an Excel model and need to figure out how to do a particular formula or set something up, you hit F1, you Google it, and that's your training. And I know it probably sounds pretty pretty sad, but it's not that bad. You know, it is what it is. And as far as my MBA, what that did, that really tied everything together, because what you do, you take your experiences and you're in a class of a few hundred people from all across the board, and you work on, you know, simulated projects together, and you do learn a lot of perspective. And when you don't take those skills with you, you do have those resources for when you need to call them or email them for any kind of a help or reference or whatever might be needed. So, yeah.
Yep. Travis, quickly, I know just in lieu of time here, your 2 cents on your company's education and training?
Almost exactly what Jono said. Mostly informal. Every consulting firm is going to have a little bit of formal education to try to orient you to the business. Obviously, it's a little less formal here than at Deloitte. But yeah, most of your training is on the job. You know, your business school experience, your undergrad experience. Undergrad, you know, I was a financial major, so I learned to do financial models. Business school really is more of just a way of thinking and approaching problems that you can transfer to a consulting skill set, but so much industry-specific experience or consulting skill set experience you're going to learn on the job versus in school.
Right. Okay, perfect, guys. Thanks. We'll move into our last piece, and again, I know we touched on this a little bit earlier, but career advancement and development, such a big piece of what we talk about here. And if we go into the next slide, Travis, can you, and Jono, because we did speak to this and the review piece and overall culture. Is there anything else you want to elaborate or speak to as it relates to advancing within your company?
I think I've touched on it. John, do you have anything?
Yeah, and you know, one thing Travis said that I do want to echo, it is a great first step in your career. Build relationships, work on teams, gain a ton of experience with the biggest companies, you know, in the country and the world. And having that as a platform to kind of go elsewhere is invaluable. Whether it's where you want to continue your career in the long term is completely up to you. I probably will not be one of those guys, but, you know, if you are, more power to you.
You know, just to follow up to both of you, actually, because it's relevant, you both have your MBAs. Can you speak really quickly to, you know, the necessity in obtaining that? It's a big question in today's world, to pursue an occupation in the consulting industry.
Yeah, well, you know, this is Jono. I think it's invaluable, and I don't mean it in such a way as being a means to an end, but an end to itself. There's not always a good financial reason or a good social reason, but having the experience of meeting so many amazing people and learning so much about, you know, the world of business and elsewhere, I don't think there's another way where I could have done, you know, so to such an extent without getting my MBA. And even though I'm massively in debt right now and relying on Deloitte to reimburse my tuition for the next 2 years, it was really something.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's pretty invaluable, and for all the reasons Jono said, and for just the reason that I think it's a great transition into a consulting career. I think that the environment that a good MBA program creates is a great stepping stone to get you from the undergrad, which is not undergrad's not the way to train for a consulting career, in my opinion. No matter what your degree is, MBA school focus. I think the focus of the MBA school curriculum is generally one that's good for training up a management consultant to get into the business.
Great. Guys, thanks so much for all your feedback on this. It's been really valuable. I'm going to turn it back over to Sally to see if there's any additional questions or anything she wants to go over before we get into the final piece here. Sally?
Thanks, Andy. Thank you, Jono and Travis, for sharing your experiences. It was really valuable. We've learned a lot. I would just make one point that, you know, from my chair here, being exposed to the variety of consulting firms that AMCF represents, there are actually firms that look solely for undergraduates for their practice. And, you know, if anyone wants more information on that, feel free to reach out. And any questions or additional comments you have can be sent to our email address, info@amcf.org. So just keep in mind that one of the best things about this industry is that it offers opportunity for a very wide breadth of students, regardless of your past, your history in terms of your education and what level you've completed. There's a lot of opportunity, so we're happy to share more information about that. And again, we'd like to thank everyone for dialing in today. We ask if you could just take one more minute. We have a few questions of you to help us to improve on our delivery of these webinars and help ensure that your needs are met. So we have a few evaluation questions here. These are anonymous, but we just ask that you take a moment to answer these questions, and no one will see the results except for AMCF for our betterment for you. What are the most effective elements of the webinar? And the least effective, please. And how would you rate the overall format of the webinar? And the next one? How would you rate the content? And the next? The duration, and tell us if your expectations were realized. If not, feel free to elaborate on that. And lastly, you have some ideas for other webinar topics that you'd like for us to deliver, please let us know what they are. With that, again, I'd like to thank you all for joining us, and thank you to our presenters, Travis and Jono, and thank you, Andy, for moderating, and we look forward to having you dial in to our next program. And in the meantime, feel free to visit our website and engage in the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you. Please stand by.